All right, what are we on? Episode 10, it's our anniversary edition.
Sweet, 10th anniversary.
And my God, I am fucking hungry. Thanks for the cheeseburger, dude.
No problem. So,
there we go.
What'd you do this week?
I don't know, but I feel like 10, it's like, that's how many fingers we have. It's rather symbolic. It's a big deal. But nobody else cares, I guess.
No,
just us.
No.
Because, like, this cares. Could be episode 1 for somebody that's listening the first time.
Well, that's true.
So, we'll say the number following the episode is a variable.
Ah, very nice.
Okay, I should shut up. I had a great week. I had a good week. It was a lab this week in class, so I didn't have to talk. I just ran around and solved problems. And
you just told whatnot. Those bitches to work, huh?
That's right. I was like, work, motherfuckers. You got a problem? Yo, you fix it, bitch. So, how about you? You went and saw Serenity?
Oh, I went and saw Serenity, and I'd never seen any episodes of Firefly before I went and saw it. It was awesome.
Really?
It was awesome. It was John Wayne meets Star Wars.
You know, the thing is that it looked like, from the previews, that it had some funny parts, but it almost looked like a made-for-sci-fi movie.
Oh, it wasn't even close. It was
no?
Made-for-sci-fi movies don't even come close to this,
okay.
In my opinion.
Okay. This is a genuine movie classification.
Yes. Yes. It just so happens that it came out of... You know, it's really funny. I've been watching the Firefly episodes now. I have them on DVD, and I just finished the first two DVDs last night. And it's just... It's awesome. I mean, I think the story is great. The characters are really awesome, and the actors do such a really good job. Oh, and by the way, this is a little tidbit for Erin Hendricks. Dude, your sister's smoking.
Nice.
She's smoking.
Oh, yeah.
I saw the episode, Mrs. What the hell is his name? The captain's name is Mal Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
So ours called Our Mrs. Reynolds was the episode. And Aaron Hendricks from Geeks and his sister Christina Hendricks plays Saffron in that episode.
Mama! I'd like to do naughty things to her.
Anyhow. So there you go. You got your first stalkers, Christina.
And our download our download count for episode 9 was up to 50.
Yes, 50.
Which means 50 are downloading. I wonder how many are listening.
Right. So anyhow, yeah, definitely see Serenity, and if you haven't seen any yet, go rent some of the episodes on DVD.
Netflix, man.
Or Netflix.
Netflix, that's what it's great for.
What else did I do? Oh, I just got done with the dual boot partition, so I'm back on Fedora.
You did.
And on Windows XP.
Nice work, dude. Smart.
So I'm getting that kind of figured around, and yeah, that's about it. Have a good week. What are you doing?
I forgot to set Audacity to real time.
Oh, see, we're trying to fix our little audio glitch problem when we run this on Dan's piece of shit laptop because it keeps glitching. And it's probably glitching right now.
This is version actually 10 of our audio setup.
I think we've run a different audio setup every time we've recorded, haven't we?
I think so.
All right.
So now we're running Audacity in real time, whatever that means.
I don't know what that means either.
But shouldn't glitch.
All right. Well, let's
that was a good cheeseburger.
Awesome.
They were quite yummy.
You're not going to get to drink any of my Diet Coke because there's one straw, and I don't want your cooties.
You got enough of that Saturday night?
Ouch.
Okay, our first topic is martial arts stuff. I put on the list the feint and the draw, and I think that this is a tactic... it's a fighting tactic that not a lot of people know about and not a lot of people utilize, I think.
I think you're right.
Now, I was going to ask you, what do you think the relevance of the feint and the draw is with street fighting? Because I have a tendency to think that there's not much.
Oh, I think it's completely relevant.
You think so?
Oh, yeah. To somebody who doesn't know what they're doing... When they,
that's true.
If you're good at the feint or the draw,
that's
I think
true.
The feint more than the draw.
Let's I think they sort of go together. That's why I put them together. Yes. But for the people that don't know what they are, let's describe them. Actually, let's pause this for a second so I can throw a pizza in the microwave. And we're back.
Wow.
Did you miss us?
Awesome.
So the definition of the feint and the draw. Essentially, the feint is when you pretend like you're going to throw some sort of attack and don't. And the object of that is to get the other person to flinch.
Right.
Because by them flinching, you can either make an opening that wasn't there before, get them to move in a particular direction you're hoping for them to move.
Yes.
I saw one in the UFC utilized really well the other day. And feints can make contact. Our whip kicks in San Yando.
Right.
They make contact, but that's not the point.
The objective is to get the opponent to try to guard against an attack that really isn't going to be followed through with.
And the one I saw in the UFC the other night was a guy did a low leg kick and then came in with the shoot to grapple him, wrap him up, and take him down. And the guy, sure enough, every time he did it three times in the same fight.
Dang.
And every time he did it, the guy sort of reached down or stepped back. And he looked down. That was the primary thing that happened. That, you know, that was all the feint needed. That was all that feint needed.
All you need is
he
that
looked
split
down.
Second.
Yep. And as soon as he looked down, he shot in, grappled him, took him down.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was a good fight. The draw is where you want to draw somebody's attack from a particular direction or a particular weapon.
So you leave yourself open or vulnerable or apparently vulnerable and hope that they think you are vulnerable and attack you there.
Yeah, and actually, interestingly enough, one of the things that led me to talk about the feint and the draw was I was thinking about, I think I was watching The Drunken Master the other day.
Oh, such a great movie.
And essentially, the drunken style of Kung Fu is all about the feint and the draw.
Yeah,
that's how it's defined.
It's about trying to get your opponent to think you're completely
unable to fight.
Yeah, unable to defend yourself or unable to. Yeah,
and that's the most extreme portion. That's the most extreme version of the feint and the draw. But even if you're in a fight and you lower your hands, knowing, and then it's not so much that oh boy he's unguarded. It's oh boy. I want you to swing at my head because it's going to be easier to anticipate your attack then.
Correct. Because you know where they're going to go.
Yeah, because it's a lot about anticipation. that's why telegraphing is so bad.
Yes.
Is because that means the other guy can anticipate your attack and then follow up based on that attack.
That's right.
So I think the feint and the draw is underutilized. I think the other interesting thing about the feint and the draw is that it's much more difficult. You can't really see it happening. Because if a guy leaves himself open in the ring, you're not sure if he's leaving himself open intentionally or by mistake.
Exactly.
And you can really only see which of those two it is when the other guy takes advantage of the opening and it's reversed.
Right.
And that's very interesting to watch.
Yep.
But the link I put up here for the feint and the draw go down a lot of the
Jeet Kune Do.
The Jeet Kune Do attributes. And these are things that can be applied to any martial art across the board. I don't care what martial art you're in, even if it's like a very strict sport taekwondo, you can still use the feint and the draw.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So it's very applicable.
And I noticed that when I looked at this article, a lot of this stuff looked like it was right out of the Dao Jeet Kune Do.
Yeah, I think they did Bruce sort of a
Lee.
Breakdown.
Yeah, and I highly recommend that book for anybody who is interested in martial arts. Yeah.
And for those non-martial artists, I think my wife didn't realize this until she and I got together, but she didn't know that she thought Bruce Lee was just a movie star.
Oh,
and she didn't understand how much of an impact Bruce Lee had on the martial art world or the martial art community.
Yeah, huge.
And that he was somewhat of a revolutionary as far as martial arts concerned, I think, because he took all those old traditional styles and he said, let's start taking a scientific look at what works, what doesn't work, what we like, what we don't like, and started piecing it apart and taking things out and putting stuff in. And I mean, that's it's sharpening the knife more than anything else.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
So anyway, I think that's our little thing on the faint and the draw. Do you have anything else to add?
No, that's
okay.
That pretty much.
So
covers it.
Just a little tip.
I could pretend like I had something to add, and then when you asked me what, I'd say, "Ha, nothing," and that'd be like my verbal,
that's right. I just
my
buck
verbal,
you up,
my
boy.
Verbal faint.
There you go. So no, just something for martial artists, especially, to keep in mind that, hey, you know what? Next time you're sparring, give it a shot. It's one of those things that's
we're going off the scale.
Are we?
Yeah.
Well, before we weren't, so I turned the microphone volume up. So let me turn it back down.
Yeah. See, I think that's good right there.
There we go.
That way I can go. Ooh, 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 ah, ah, and make my monkey noises like
all
that.
Right.
See,
and I can go, booyah! Oh, I was a little off the scale there. That's all right. I just won't do that anymore.
Someday we'll have like a technical setup that we can rely on, and it's the same every time we do it.
This is kind of fun, though.
Kind of fun.
Yeah. Not a lot of fun, but kind of.
And your pizza keeps beeping. I can hear it.
Oh, okay. Let me pause this. All right, I have now in front of me a lovely cheese pizza with
That's like an instant pizza when we push the pause button.
Yeah, it is.
That's crazy.
Wait till we listen to it, dude. It'll be even faster.
Faster than instant.
Faster than instant. It's like a quantum instant.
Quantum pizza?
That's right, quantum pizza. And I have a lovely Sunny D. It's tangy orange. So, shall we move on?
That's there you go.
That's my tangy orange Sunny D.
That's
I love my Sunny D, man.
Sounds like you're working the palm.
They'll never know.
All right. We're going to move on to some, I'll know though. That's disgusting. We're going to move on to some tech science stuff.
Yeah.
Stuff on the jigger-ma-bobber.
Well, my first tech tip is, what are you getting so fished about? That's a little play on words there.
I like that.
Phishing. Do you know what phishing is?
That's when people send out those email things like, I am a guy from Saudi Arabia, and I'm a prince, and I need to get out of the country. Please send me $1 million.
Yes and no.
Well, that's the early examples of phishing.
That's the early examples of phishing.
The new phishing are, we're your bank, and we have problems with your credit card, and you need to send us your social security number, your mother's maiden name, and all your pertinent personal information to us now.
The thing as well that I think that people need to be really careful of and really aware of is I got a phish email from eBay, supposedly, right? And since I have HTML formatting on in Outlook, when it brings up the link to eBay, it says http://accounts.ebay.com. And if you hover your mouse over that, it'll pop up with the real address, which is just an IP address in Russia somewhere.
Ugh.
So the label on the email is not necessarily the link that you're going to. And generally what I suggest to everybody is that if there is any question, for example, if there's a question about your eBay account, open a browser, type www.ebay.com, log into your account, and check your messages there.
That's right.
Never click on a link directly from an email.
No.
It's a bad idea.
Well, and I'll have to say that's especially a bad idea if you're using a client like that's based on your computer, anything like Outlook or anything like that, you shouldn't, because you should never do that.
And of
which
course,
is why I always recommend a web-based email. Because they're not getting information. You're not actually working with files physically on your computer other than maybe a couple temporary files.
Right, but the problem is you click on the link that you go to looks exactly like the eBay login page.
Well, yes.
That's the problem.
I see what you're saying.
Right?
Right.
And so they log in thinking they're at eBay. They hit the go button. It takes them to a page that says, our system is currently down. Please try back again in 24 hours.
Right.
And they go, oh, shit, it's down. I guess I'll have to try back.
Meanwhile, they just sent their username and password
to Russia.
To Russia.
I'm sorry, Russia. I don't mean to pick on you.
Why not? They deserve to be picked up.
Well, they're the evil empire, when I was growing up, at least. So
I know.
It's hard not to pick
them. They're not so evil anymore. They're a little too poor to be evil.
Yeah. Who do we... Who, the Afghanis? No? No. Because they're like democracy and stuff.
Well, something like that.
North Koreans.
Yeah, let's pick on them.
It's a North Korean website.
Damn.
So yeah. That's my tech tip. Either...
Yes, be very... Phishing is
very insidious.
Yes, and it's recent. I mean, it's one of the big things that's going on right now.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see a huge increase in things like this as computers become even more big. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
More big. Bigger.
Wow.
Woo! And
along with your vocabulary.
Yes. What I'm trying to say here is as computers become even more and more ingrained in our society, we're going to see even more scams like this that are even more real looking, you know?
The thing is, though, is I think that as our society grows up, they become more and more familiar with this stuff and more aware. I mean, even with any of these phishing sites, if you clicked on a link and you looked up at the address bar, you would notice, you would see that it's not an eBay site.
Right.
Now, if my grandma's on the internet and she gets that email, she might not know the difference.
That's right.
But I just think that as society gets more and more familiar and more comfortable with the internet, this type of incident will have less and less impact.
Damn you and the burps.
I know.
All right. Well, let's move on.
So anyway, either read your emails, set your Outlook to text only, and just read the text.
That's a good tip, right?
Instead of HTML, or always make sure you type in the address separately from clicking on the link.
Yep.
So
yeah, don't follow any links. Type them in yourself.
Yep. There you go. There's our tech tip.
Okay. Excellent.
Science and tech stuff, or tech and science stuff.
Science and tech. Wow. They're already talking about the next gen PSP.
Nice.
And the problem that they're having is the problem that I talked about in one of our other episodes, is the damn thing doesn't have any frickin' hard disk space.
Yeah.
You gotta pay an extra $250, which is the price of a PSP for a 1 gig card. Alright, maybe it's more like $100, but still, that's a lot of money. When you can go buy a 4 gig iPod for the same price? Or
4 gig iPod's about $200.
There you go. And you get 4 gigs, what do you get in your PSP? A 32 meg card that's a specialized format made by Sony. Thanks.
Well, this is the thing though, is that you can't play games on your iPod.
I know.
Well, you can, but it's like Breakout. It's not very good. So
I realize there's a different purpose, but it just frustrates me to see 4 gigs somewhere else and the PSP's got a 32 meg card.
Well, I think this is I'm not surprised because it's Sony, but if they had done a compact flash card instead of what do they use?
Yeah, some brand new
anyway,
format of it.
That means I could go out and buy a 4 gig SD card if I really wanted
to.
And keep in mind that when you buy an iPod, what you're really paying for is that hard drive. That's the vast majority of the cost for an iPod is that hard drive. The vast majority of the cost for a PSP is the screen.
Right. And it's pretty... I'll give it that. I'm not disappointed in my PSP.
So,
Don't get me wrong.
I think the problem becomes is that if you want an iPod PSP all-in-one, you're going to pay $600 for it.
Right.
You're going to pay what you would pay if you bought them separately. So what you get is you get a game machine that will play MP3s. Won't do it that well. It'll do it, but it doesn't do playlists. It's still kind of bulky.
Right.
But
that stuff will come along.
And I think it'll get cheaper and cheaper. But I'm wondering what the next generation PSP is going to... Is it just going to have more CPU, a better screen?
Well, I think basically the big thing they're pushing right now is... Dude.
Damn.
Is the hard drive. That's the big thing they're pushing with the next gen. Because they want to be able to compete with the iPod and the music part. And right now they can't.
Right. And see, the thing is it's too small. It's too small for a laptop hard drive.
Correct.
And the compact flash hard drives are still pretty expensive. Fruit thought.
Well, we'll have to see. It's going to be another year. We'll see what happens there. Something to keep an eye on.
Maybe they'll have the screens that roll up.
No, they're not going to have that. Not by then.
Cynic.
At least not according to this article. So, all right. The next thing we have here is attentiontrust.org.
This kind of scared me.
Well, actually, this is interesting. It scared me at first when I read it. AttentionTrust.org is a company that's making software to allow you to monitor yourself on the internet. So you can keep track of where you go and what you do to figure out where you've been spending all that time, because I never remember. I mean, I can't tell you where I spent all my... I spent a lot of time on the internet, but I can't really tell you where I went.
Porn.
Well, other than there, but that's the obvious one. That goes without saying. But, so anyway, they're developing this software that lets you kind of monitor your internet activities to figure out where you're spending your time. Now, that's cool from the fact that if you're doing self-monitoring, where it's not cool is the next step is obviously they're going to have software to give to somebody else who can monitor anybody's activity. Mainly, like, you know, your workplace, which is, I mean, they already do some of that stuff anyway, but...
My work does it. We have a program, I'm not sure if it's called Big Brother, or if it's just what the network guys call it, but... Essentially, it's this piece of software that logs every URL that you've been to and how long you're on that URL.
How do they know when the browser session quits?
Timeout.
So you may go into a page. How long's the timeout? If you go into a page and immediately close the browser and your timeout's 15 minutes, they're going to assume you spent 15 minutes on that page.
Yes, they will.
Logged out there.
Yes, they will. And they don't. The thing is that. I mean, that's a technology that could be taken advantage of potentially. My work's very good about it. I mean, they don't really, like I was at babes.ign.com and, you know, FARC and stuff like that, and I've never had anything said to me ever.
Right.
So I think that the only time they do anything is when they see, and this happened, porn sites at 2 a.m. Somebody was coming in after hours so that they could use RT1 line to surf porn.
2 a.m.?
Yeah.
Why don't you just use your home account?
Well, probably because the guy was married or whatever the case might be. But, point being, honey, I got to go into work tonight.
It's 2 a.m. I know, but they desperately need me.
Yeah. I got to do some stuff with some wood. I got to do some woodworking.
Anyhow, attentiontrust.org, just something to...
Interesting idea.
Yeah, something that I thought was interesting.
I'm kind of afraid to know.
I'm kind of afraid to know, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I know generally where I spend most of my time. Most of it, to be honest, is pushing the damn refresh button on my email.
Yeah, that's true.
Email is like a little Christmas present.
Yeah, I think I'd have like 6-7 hours a day at rockstormedia.com.
Oh, yeah.
Rockstormedia.com, by the way.
That's
the
right.
The name of our website.
Nice lead-in.
You know what? I'd also like to put a shout out to Scott Ransom. Scott Ransom is the gentleman that does our theme song.
Oh,
so
hey, Scott.
Thank you, Scott, for that.
Thanks for the theme song.
I have not emailed him about our podcast yet because...
Honestly, I think it's one of the coolest intro songs
I think so too.
That I've heard so far,
yeah.
To be perfectly honest.
The only other one I was thinking about doing is a lot of them now, like Dignation and Twit and stuff like that, are cutting together previous episodes, like little voice intros.
Yeah, you know what? I don't like that.
I don't like that either.
We kind of do this kind of on the fly voice intro that just before our music cuts in. It makes it interesting.
Yeah, I like that too.
Yeah, it's too commercialized the other way.
Okay, sounds good. We'll keep it. It's done.
Man, I was going to say something. I can't remember what it was now.
About Attention Trust?
About
Big Brother?
No.
About.
No, I can't remember.
Smoking some hog?
Maybe that was it.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. The Electronic Frontier Foundation turns 15.
Cheers to them. They get a swig of Sunny D.
Those guys are awesome. I mean, they're basically around to help defend the rights of the consumer on the web. I mean,
yeah.
Consumers versus the big companies who are trying to...
Not only that, but they do things like they pay attention to the FBI, and when they feel that the FBI is infringing upon the rights... See, because what a lot of people don't know is that there are very few laws. I mean, they're in place now, but, you know, 15 years ago, easily, there were no laws that governed email or any of that stuff.
Nothing.
I mean, if the government wanted to read your email, no problem. They didn't need a judge. They didn't need anything. It was like, it was free and clear. Everything was open.
Well, but on the same token, there weren't any laws the other way either. I mean, there were no laws for anyone, meaning for the consumers could do quite a few things they weren't supposed to be doing it either.
Yeah.
And what I find interesting today, there's big fights between, I mean, there's governments trying to establish laws, and you got you know, places like the EFF that are trying to make sure that those laws don't get implemented unless they're done right.
And it's difficult. I think that, you know, my philosophy on government involvement in my life, more than anything else, is I think that it's important to have a balance. And it's important to have strong opinions on both sides. They argue a bunch, and you end up right in the middle.
Yes, I agree with
and
that.
And when you get any system that's swaying too far one way, that's when I get nervous.
Right.
And I know that the EFF was very pissed about the second Patriot Act.
You mean that they're going to reestablish? Yeah. Because they originally were going to let a bunch of that stuff die off. They're not going to anymore.
Oh, not only did they not let it die off, they've strengthened a lot of that stuff.
Right.
And a lot of that stuff is quite scary. I mean, to say that someone can come into your house, look through all your shit, leave without you knowing they were there, and they don't even need the signature of a judge?
Yeah.
What the fuck is that?
You know what I say to that, though? I mean, I agree. I think that's crap. I think that's total bull. I'll call bullshit on the government.
Yeah.
Bullshit. But if you're innocent and not doing anything,
I know.
The average citizen is not going to have to worry about that. Are there cases? Yes. But are there cases involving all sorts of government and law that people... I mean, but weird things happen and wrong things happen to people that are innocent. That's right. The way it works.
And like I say, more importantly, that, you know, I've always believed that laws are not made for the individual. Laws are not intended to solve a single person's problem.
Oh, no.
They're there to solve the problems of society.
They're more like a guideline.
It's more like a guideline. So I'm very grateful to the EFF because they do shit that, in all honesty, I'm too lazy to do, and I do feel uncomfortable about the government being too invasive.
Yeah.
And I don't want to think that, especially when it comes to questions of racism and, you know, people getting people of a specific ethnicity. Wow.
Say that five times fast.
Okay, I need a pause after saying that. being taken advantage of, you know, it's you give the government too much power, and that's what the U.S. was founded on, was we were pissed because the government had too much power.
Right.
So we left that government. We fought a fairly large war at the time.
It was pretty big.
To not have that government rule our lives. And, you know, I, in all honesty, and I don't usually like to get political, but I see us starting to drift back in that direction. It's getting very, very centralized. And I think it's really strange that, you know, conservatives oftentimes say, well, you know, you should spend your taxes the way you want to spend them. Right?
Yep.
And we should monitor everything you're doing while you're spending that money. Whoa, wait a minute.
Who says that? I never heard anybody say that.
Well, the conservatives now. I mean, they're the ones pushing the Patriot Act.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Right. So, in other words, like, you know, on one hand, they say, we want to give you a lot of freedom. And then the other hand, we say, but...
We want to see what you're doing with it.
We want to see what you're doing with it.
Right.
You got to give us the freedom to monitor the bad guys.
Right.
Quote unquote. Well, who says who the bad guys are and who the bad guys aren't? That's what kind of scares me. You know? So, anyway, thanks, EFF. You're doing a snappy job.
Damn, that turned way political.
Sorry about that.
See that? See what happens?
Okay,
see what happens when we don't monitor what's going on? You get out of control, you start expressing your political agendas.
So, fast forward to here. Good. If you wanted to skip that conversation.
All right. All right, let's move on to something more important than politics. Quantum computing.
Ooh, I actually heard Universe Today, the podcast Universe Today, great podcast,
okay,
had an interview with the guy that did this.
Really?
Quantum computing.
Let's tell them what they did first. What happened? These guys figured out a way to trap a light in a crystal.
Yes.
They basically have a crystal or a laser that points at the crystal on one point and actually makes it translucent so this other laser can travel through it.
Right.
While that laser is actually in the middle of traveling through it, or is traveling through it there, that beam of light, they turn off the other laser. and it actually traps that light inside the
crystal. The crystal turns opaque.
Right.
So that the light cannot escape.
Yes.
And its quantum state is captured with that light.
Exactly. So they can, and they can store so much more than just a zero and a one.
Yeah,
in the light. It's
the article
out
is
of control.
Very interesting. Because, well, there's a couple things. Like, subatomic particles have spins.
Yes.
And you can have the strangest thing, one of the weird things about just quantum reality in general, is that you can have a spin greater than 360 degrees.
Really?
And it's meaningful.
Hi.
You know? So 362 degrees is not the same as 2 degrees.
See, that's a little mind-boggling.
Yeah, we've got a new category that we're tossing around. I just called it the learning annex. But I was going to talk about some quantum stuff that I'm reading about, some super strength stuff that I'm reading about. So we might get into the quantum bizarreness later. But
cool.
Needless to say, it's very strange.
Yeah.
But
storage capacity
is phenomenal
for quantum. You know, quantum computing is going to be out of this world.
And I think the scary thing about quantum computing, and people are like, well, what the hell do you need that much computing power for? Well, the big
There's
thing...
There's never enough.
Well, not only that, but the big thing it's used for is cracking encryptions.
Yeah.
Because
that's gonna be huge.
When you can crack 128-bit encryptions in 5 minutes, that's a big deal.
Yeah.
That's a huge deal.
All I can say is people used to say 512K RAM is going to be plain enough for everybody.
What'd your first computer have?
64. Man, I don't know. I had that Texas Instruments.
I mean, what's your first adult computer?
TI-84. That was an adult computer, man. I had the cartridges.
No, you were an adult.
When I was an adult?
Like your first college computer.
Oh, shit. My first college computer was a Mac.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. It was the 660 AV Mac. The new AV line of action had just come out. That thing was a badass.
Nice.
I love that thing.
I had a Packard Bell.
You.
A 386.
Well, that was probably back when they were good, though, when they first came out.
Somebody just knocked on my door?
I don't know. Did they?
Nope.
Sweet.
A Packard Bell 386. It had 256 megs. No, did not.
No, not back then.
What would it have had? Oh, it had 4 megs of RAM.
There you go. Now we're talking.
It had a 4 meg chip in it.
Yeah, I think I had 16 with my Mac. 16
right,
Macs
that was
RAM.
An AV Mac.
Oh, I know. And I was doing some
Macs
serious
have always
video
had more RAM than hard disk, though, haven't they?
I don't know about that. I don't think that's true.
Because I had a 212 meg hard drive.
Oh, monkey.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Now it won't even fit one of our shows.
Nope. I know. Isn't that sad? That just means we talk too
so
much.
So quantum computing, it's going to be huge. I really think that this is one of these things that's actually going to happen.
This is the next step in computers.
Yes.
Without a doubt, in
my
mind. It's the next step.
And it's a huge step.
Okay. What's this next article here? September 2005 web survey.
Yeah, I did this. I did this a little bit for the link. It's pretty cool. Now I'm very close to the microphone.
You're a dork.
Loading. Right now it's loading. So loading.
So this is
loading,
a survey that
loading.
Takes a long time to load.
This is our that's our podcast version of the waving flag in IE. Loading.
Us just saying
loading.
That.
Loading. Yeah. Wow. Maybe
well,
it's
we'll
dead.
Come back to that since it timed out. Yeah.
Timed out.
Nice survey, Dan.
Okay. Anyway, it showed how much more Apache is running than IIS.
How much more?
A lot more.
Really?
And IIS actually took a big dump. And I think it was around the time that virus came out. Or the worm.
Big old dookie.
The worm. People stopped using IIS all of a sudden. It was
big old
sudden.
Microsoft fecal dump.
Yeah. So, and I just, it was a follow-up more than anything else on the story that we had about viruses being made for Windows because it's very ubiquitous. But Apache is definitely more well-used.
All right,
so.
Well, when that comes back up,
it's
all
cool
you listeners out there
charts
should, go,
and stuff.
Should go check it out. Yeah. Graphs and charts are always good.
Yeah.
Gamma ray bursts.
GRBs, astronomy stuff.
They just talked about this on NPR.
Did they really?
They said when something gets digested by a black hole, what typically happens? And the answer was it gives off an enormous amount of gamma rays.
And it's a neutron star.
A neutron star, that's right.
It's essentially when two things of extremely large mass come hurtling together. So you got two neutron stars, two black holes, or a neutron star and a black hole. For those of you that don't know, a neutron star is essentially a giant ball of neutrons. An atom is made up of both neutrons and electrons. A regular star is made up of mostly helium and hydrogen atoms that are smashing into each other at the center of it, and that's what produces light.
Man, I think we should do celebrity death match between you and Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Oh, it's disgusting, dude. So essentially what happens is in a neutron star, the gravity is so powerful that all the electrons get stripped off of the atoms. And you just have a giant ball of neutrons. And I think like a teaspoon of neutron star would... I think that Bill Nye had this explanation of it. If you had a ball of neutron star mass, right, like a super ball,
okay,
and you dropped it, it would speed through the Earth like butter. And it would come popping out the other side.
Crazy.
And it's so heavy that it would go back and forth like Swiss cheese through the entire planet until it centered at the center of the planet.
No shit.
Yep. Yeah.
Huh. So what happens when something like that passes through a human body? That's what I want to know.
Well, I had Taco Bell last night, so I can tell you this afternoon. Mud butt, they call it.
That's disgusting. Very nice. Well, so maybe anyway, we should get a recording of that for the audience. I'm sure they're
my
probably...
Mud butt?
Yeah.
We should check it for a gamma ray burst.
It'll be a burst of something.
So the problem was, is that they found these gamma ray bursts, and the weirdest thing is they couldn't really figure out where they were coming from, because it would be so fast, you know? And these bursts of energy are on galactic scales. They're
yes.
huge. Absolutely huge. So finally what they did was they got this, the fast gamma ray observatory or something like
yep,
that.
Yep.
And one detector would detect where in the sky the gamma ray burst was coming from, and then the other detector very quickly would instantly turn and look. And the first thing they did was they did a map, and they realized that they were coming from galaxies.
Oh, cool.
So they're not just coming from empty, dead space out of nowhere.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Because that would have been even more weird.
Right. But once they got some... other frequencies other than gamma rays, they could now see these things in x-rays and stuff like that, they could make sense of where it was coming from. But, should I explain a black hole? What a black hole
no,
is?
No, we can do that some other time.
Okay.
We'll do that for the next little science.
And doesn't everybody know what a black hole is?
I think you do. If you don't, look it up yourself. Yeah. Google answers.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
well,
if you don't, just look at your asshole in the mirror.
It blew my mind.
So gamma ray burst, that's actually one
well,
of the mysteries.
Well, and why is this important? This is important because this is the new global catastrophe.
I forgot about it.
We're going to see movies about this
that's
now.
Right.
About some neutron star that's close enough to the Earth to cause an explosion so massive, or gamma ray burst that's so massive,
that's right,
that it literally obliterates the planet.
Yeah.
And they said the chances of that happening are actually bigger than an asteroid hitting the Earth. And we all know what the possibilities of that are. I mean, we see it in the movies all the time.
Right.
So
I'm ducking.
Asteroids.
You should see me, man.
Dive bombing this
That's
planet
right.
left and right.
That's right. I'm like a guy who ducks asteroids.
Shut up. Okay.
I'm like the Millennium
this
Falcon.
Is too much, this is too much science for me. Let's move on to something more important.
Google and Sun team up.
Google and Sun are teaming up to
build... make gum.
I hate you. No, they're gonna do a web-based office suite to compete with Microsoft
That's
Vista and
a
Office.
Web-based.
Web-based.
That's crazy.
This is the next step towards the web OS. A web-based operating
system. And I'll
tell
you what, we've got one of the problems that we're having at work right now is we're running a VPN. But we don't want to do a secure connect VPN.
Right.
Well, you know what we could do instead of a VPN is if all of our applications were web-based, we just put them out on the internet behind an SSL connection, and we don't have to worry about any of this bullshit.
That's the future of software, and I'm going to say it over and over and over again, and they're going to do something that I've already talked about. I've talked about this for years. They're going to have you lease that software out where you can, you know, log in to the Google, you know, online or the Google Web Office, and, you know, you pay some sort of subscription or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and you have access to all that Office software on the web. I think it's brilliant. I like that idea personally.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I'm sick of having to reformat my hard drives and move all my shit around so I don't lose it when I do my reformats.
Yeah.
I want somebody else to worry about that.
Yeah, me too.
I'm lazy.
And all the upgrades are on the server and...
Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. I like it.
I like
Go
it too.
Go gum. It'd be gun, wouldn't it?
Gun. Gun. I'm like, gum? Where are you getting gum? Okay.
Or Smoogle.
Or Smoogle.
I like Smoogle.
Speaking of strange things on Google, how about Gizoogle?
A buddy of mine sent me this site. You've got to check out the link. It's the funniest damn thing. We got to try one, dude.
Gizoogle is a site that basically takes a website and then converts all the text to gangsta speak. And it is freaking...
Moving the microphone. Hang on. Okay.
It's freaking hysterical.
Yeah.
It is really hysterical.
What is up with my internet connection?
Dude, our audience is going
to
scream.
Oh, here we go. Actually, the link goes straight to an enchantments article. Moving the microphone. Straight to an enchantments article on Wizards of the Coast site.
Which is even more funny. To see D&D...
Right.
And gangsta speak.
The ability to magically force brother to do your bidden is one of the mizzy rhyming and terrifying aspects of magic bitch ass nigga.
It doesn't get any better.
No. That's just funny stuff. I think I spent half an hour punching in sites.
I spent about 2 hours
punching
in all sorts of sites.
Yeah.
I did our blogs.
Yeah.
I did Wizards of the Coast.
I did the Conservative Coalition. the Christian Coalition. That's amazing.
Christian, nice. So anyhow, Gizoogle,
yeah.
Go there and check it out if you need a good laugh.
Oh, man.
And you'll waste some serious time.
I wonder if they have the Gideon's Bible online.
Oh, I bet they do.
That would be.
Ooh, the Bible. Gizoogle the Bible.
Gizoogle the Bible.
We're going to try that, and we'll give you some excerpts on
so,
Gizoogle.
So, yeah, please,
Bible.
GIZOOGLE.com if you don't feel like going out to our site and getting delved to episode.
It's very fun.
Our site, RockstarMedia.com.
That reminds me. I was reading in my book, The Best Software Writing, last night, and they talked about the future of the conference phone call. And then basically one of the examples the guy said is he knew a guy who, when he did a conference call, he also set up a Wiki, and he set up an IM chat. So the IM chat was used for people to raise their hand, because one of the things they talk about is software being this a way to actually improve the social bindings between humans when they're doing conversations and stuff like that.
Okay.
It's a way to talk to each other. Well, when you're on a conference call, it's very difficult for you to figure out what he called the interrupt process. How do I know it's okay for me to speak, and do I have something
right.
to say? No one can see you, so they don't know.
Because you have no physical gestures to base
right.
that.
Right, so they use the chat for physical gestures, like to raise your hand, and then the forum moderator will say, okay, you get to speak next.
Right.
But they're still talking over the phone. And when they have an idea that's important, someone records it in the Wiki so everybody can see it.
Oh, that's pretty clever.
And so it's basically a loosely coupled chat forum.
Sure.
Where they have these three programs all running in their loosely coupled.
Very interesting.
I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
And the next time we do a conference call, which I don't think will ever happen, but if we were to do it...
You're going to do that, for sure.
I'm going to do that, for sure.
All right.
So I don't know why I went on that tangent. I can't remember.
I can't either.
That's it. Okay. Let's get into something much more fun and important than science or tech or anything like that. Let's talk about Rifts the movie.
Okay, so Rifts the movie involves these two neutron stars...
And shut up. Rifts is a role-playing game.
Yes.
That basically centers the
I like Rifts. I like the whole concept.
Yeah,
the
concept
thing.
Behind it is very scientific, actually.
Yeah.
This kind of leads in. Where basically there are these ley lines across the planet
right.
that each of them are basically power zones. And as you get to these more powerful places, there are rifts in the fabric of time that allow you to pass into different, what do they call them?
Time and space.
Yeah, time and space.
Yeah.
So what do they call those? Alternate universes.
Dimensions.
Dimensions. Dimensions.
Dimensions.
Dimensions.
Dormensions. Dormensions.
Right. So they're going to make a movie based on the role-playing game Rifts, based on that whole...
Now, that I think making a movie based on the universe is kind of cool. I guess what I would like to see, especially with a role-playing game, is a TV series.
That's what I would love to see.
I think that would be much more interesting, because it's really... Okay, so you make it about the universe, but what story are you going to use?
Well, at that point, you can use any story, right?
Well, right. And I mean, it's at that point, it's like, okay, you've got a great universe for this two-hour movie,
right?
And then it's just gone.
They tried to make a TV series out of the White Wolf game Vampire.
Oh, really?
It was loosely based on it, and it was kind of promoted and pushed by White Wolf, Catastrophe.
Yeah.
Catastrophe. And the reason why it was a catastrophe, in my opinion, is because all the things that were kind of white wolfish about it, the terminology and that kind of stuff, they didn't use it. For whatever reason, they couldn't use it. And I don't know if some sort of conflict came up and White Wolf finally said, no, forget it. But it utterly failed because you lost that connection. It's like when we talk about D&D and the D20 system.
Right.
We have this connection with Dungeons & Dragons and the terms they use in there and kobolds and dragons and orcs and all that stuff. If you have a fantasy setting without those familiar terms,
right,
you lose
a lot of people.
Yeah. So, you know, that would have been great. I mean, vampire, who doesn't like vampire shows in general?
Everybody likes vampire.
Vampires are fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people also love that White Wolf system, and they heard some of this stuff talk about the Camarilla and yada, yada, yada. Since they never used the terms and the stuff kind of, it was a flop. It was a flop.
Nah, that's too bad.
So if you're going to make a role-playing game into a movie, make sure that you use the terms that people are familiar with.
Generic terminology.
It's going to make them more comfortable. Yeah. It's going to feel more familiar to them.
And you know what? The hardcore people that love the game need to fucking suck it up. If they're like, well, they're not calling it the right thing.
Right.
They just need to fucking suck it up because their game's going to get more popular because of it.
Yes.
And everybody wins. So stop your crying.
Stop your yammering. So anyhow, I find it interesting.
Did that say when it was coming out?
No, it was still pretty much in the negotiation stage, I believe.
Interesting.
But I'm going to follow that a little bit more.
I know I loved D&D the Animated Series.
Oh, that was great.
Yeah.
With Uni.
I just like making that noise.
I want to know why that little kid got to be the barbarian. I mean,
yeah,
seriously.
What's up with that?
Yeah. I don't know. Okay.
Movie making, continuity errors. This, I think, is one of a very fun thing while you're watching movies is to identify the continuity errors. Click on the link, check it out. There are some really funny ones in here, and of course I should have had this opened before we started. Okay.
Let's explain what a continuity error is real quick.
A continuity error is, for example, when you have two people having dinner at a table, and someone's drink is full, they do a shot, you're in a two shot, right?
Yep.
So they do an over the shoulder of the one person and the drink is full, they switch shots to the other person, because they're having a conversation. And when they switch back to the original person, their glass is all of a sudden half empty.
Right. And then they go back to being full again.
I found that liquid in glasses and cigarettes are probably two of the most difficult things to keep continuity on.
And clocks.
Yeah, so for example, and this website has a bunch of them, in Star Wars, when the stormtrooper breaks into the control room, the stormtrooper is on the right of the screen, hits his head on the door frame. On the DVD release, they've added a thump when he hits it. So I'm guessing that was unintentional, probably something
that's everybody, a really famous scene too. I see the movie, he hits his head, you kind of chuckle.
Yeah. Because I'm sure it was probably something that they just completely missed when they were filming.
Right.
And they got into the editing room and said, well, we can't not have this scene in here. And what are we going to do, you know? And even in the DVD release, it's weird that they put the sound in there. They must have actually liked it.
Right.
You know?
Well, it does. It's more real. Think about it.
Yeah. Right. And Lucas is famous for his... what do they call it? Dirty Future.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yes.
Can
we read another one of these?
Yeah. Gladiator. In the Battle of Carthage, in the Colosseum, one of the chariots is turned over. Once the dust settles, you can see the gas cylinder in the back of the chariot. And
nice.
I've actually seen that scene before. They turn over, right? They do all the shield blocking thing.
Right, and they jam the spears into the wheels and
it turns over and you can see the cylinder in there. That to me is not necessarily what you would call a traditional continuity error, but it's just a movie mistake more than anything else.
Right.
One of the biggest ones I've seen recently was two people are having a conversation and someone has opened up their door, is standing between the open door and their car talking. And then two flashes later, they're outside the door with the car door closed.
Right.
And I've got to think to myself that what probably happened was there was a day between shoots. And they forgot to watch the dailies, and they forgot to pay attention to that. And when it came up to it, the actor or actress didn't remember opening the door and just shot the scene however it was comfortable for them to shoot.
Right.
Meanwhile, they had opened the door.
Well, and the
other
thing,
when you get into the editing booth, you're done.
The other thing that happens is you may have shot a scene or got some footage that you really liked, and that was where it fit, but it just so happened you shot that footage before they opened the door.
And you're like, you know what? Fuck it. Nobody's going to notice it.
Right.
And they're probably right. The first time you see the movie, you probably won't notice it.
Right.
That's pretty blatant. But yeah, so just some fun things to watch out for when you're watching movies, and some things to be careful about when you're making movies.
Yeah, you almost need to have somebody be a continuity director anyway.
Yeah. All right, we got to whip through the rest. We got 10 minutes, dude.
We're gonna move on to our role playing stuff here. And I just wanted to do a quick update on a couple of things.
Yeah,
we talked about Steve Jackson Games.
Yeah,
and that
we talked
lawsuit
about a few
was basically based around GURPS and the whole Illuminati.
The Illuminati
thing going on.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So basically the FBI busted in there, took all their shit, wouldn't give it back to them, kept going to give it back. They didn't give it back. And they ended up getting, so they ended up having to rebuild the entire GURPS thing from backup copies.
Oh my god.
So anyway, it was ridiculous. But anyway, that's what happened there. And we also, one of the things we talked about last week was who created D&D.
Yes.
Gary Gygax. And Dave Arneson.
I'm so ashamed.
I know. I can't believe who the fuck did you say did it?
Steve Jackson. He's a player.
Alright.
And what happened to TSR?
This is kind of fun. TSR basically just kind of ran out of money.
Ah.
And then Wizards of the Coast bought them up, picked up where they left off, and
now did they buy TSR, or did they simply buy the games that TSR was making?
This article, I believe, says that they actually bought TSR.
Okay. So TSR is officially gone.
Yes.
Wow, that's sad.
I know.
I will shed a tear for TSR this evening.
Okay, I'm done.
Homebrew RPG. We also talked about some homebrews.
Yes. So there's a link that we have on here that's a list of homebrewed RPG games.
And for everyone, that link is at roxormedia.com along the right side under Wiki, episode 10.
Yes.
You just do a page index in episode 10.
And there are a slew of homebrew games.
Yes.
A slew.
Yes.
So you have to check this out for yourself. There are so many. A lot of them are built off of things. People have customized versions of GURPS, Fudge. Anything you can think of.
Yeah.
Oh, or if you're really interested, you can go to darktiergames.com,
yes,
which is my gaming site, where I've made a bunch of homemade systems. The latest one, which actually I just updated the other day, is called Baneful Signs.
Nice.
Baneful Signs uses runes and stuff like that, and they have a Harry Potter supplement for it.
Neat.
It's all free, so, you know.
Don't abuse it.
Nobody should be able to give me a hard time for that. I was going to put all my open source.
I swear my favorite is still Agility. I love that game.
What?
Is that what it's called?
The Age system? Which one?
No. The one where it's just a pure combat.
Oh yeah. We did one called Impact.
Impact, yeah.
Which was basically you build your own fighter. And it was very complicated. It's a very complicated
system. And Steve Jackson had a game called Man to Man. And Man to Man is where GURPS came from. Because Man to Man was a combat system for arena fighting, essentially.
Okay. And that's what we
did. It was like a Car Wars, except with people.
Yes.
And then GURPS grew out of Man to Man. But Impact, I love that game.
Yeah,
that's one of my favorites. It was very good.
My personal favorite game that we've made so far as I'm concerned, is Barony. Barony
is a
chess variant based on a triangles instead of squares.
It's like a Chinese checkers and chess put together.
Right. And you can actually build a team.
Yeah.
And you actually level your character. So it has RPG elements and it's a chess variant. And that's one of my favorite games that I've ever done.
Yep.
And that would be sweet if somebody would, you know, Wizards of the Coast, pick that up and maybe sell it or something.
Yep.
Hasbro. So that's it.
We also encourage anyone that has made their own games to send us an email.
Yeah, we'll mention it on the air. Recorded.
Dan or Sterling at roxormedia.com. We'll mention it on the air, and that's that. And plus, it's just fun to take a look at them. So
it is fun.
All right, moving on. 2007 D&D calendar art vote. Essentially what it is their Wizards of the Coast is putting together a 2007 calendar, and they want web folk to vote on the art that's going on the calendar.
Which one did you vote for?
I don't remember, actually. It was either the Big Ogre or Tiamat, one of the two.
One of my favorite pictures ever, even to this day, is the picture of the Frenzied Berserker. It's this barbarian-looking chick with her knees folded behind her, and she's up in the air with this big-ass greatsword. And that picture's just awesome.
Putting some hurtin' for certain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, some good art up there more than anything else. Fun stuff.
Excellent.
What do we got? RPG by email. I've been sort of toying with the idea of starting up an RPG by email game. I've got an idea for a plot in my head. At this point, I don't want to commit anything that I'm not ready to commit to.
Right.
So I'm still thinking about it. But this link is, and I just Googled it, game by email or whatever.
Sure.
They have a lot of tools. They have die rollers out there. You can do all kinds of stuff through the support system that a lot of other people have already built up.
Yeah, so. There's people, I mean, play by email is a huge, there's a huge following for that.
Yeah.
And people have, they've gotten together and built the tools needed to basically, for that, it's the social, the glue for that social environment.
And I think that it's a lot better for the casual gamer in that you don't necessarily have to have, we're going to get together this weekend and play for 12 hours straight or whatever. You can, when you get the chance, fire off a quick email saying this is what my guy is doing. I think my system, the one that I'm going to do, will probably be diceless, just so that we don't have to deal with all the mess of rolling dice and all that stuff.
I think,
but I'm not quite sure how that's going to work then.
I think we should think about our idea with the chat room and the wiki.
Well, again,
that would be a great medium
for
it wouldn't be the same thing.
Yeah.
It would be more interactive.
Sure. No, that's not a bad idea at all. Yeah, that would be cool.
Because, we all live in different cities and stuff. Other guys live in different cities, and that may be a way for us all to get together and play without having to leave your house. That may be kind of cool.
At the same time, you just play World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Damn the evil of that game.
Damn technology. Okay.
All right.
This is one of my favorite articles of all time, I think. Geek overcomes social anxiety by turning life into RPG. So what's happening now is this guy is so sweet, and he gives himself experience points for talking to girls. And I think he has even levels associated with it. And, if a girl says yes to a date, he counts that as a critical hit. And he tracks his project, his progress as a social RPG. Which, you know what, as fucking silly and ridiculous as it sounds, whatever works for you.
Right.
And obviously that's working for him, and I think it's pretty ingenious of him to even think of it.
I want to see the titles he has associated to the different levels he can achieve.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
pimp.
Dork.
Big pimp.
Yeah, pimp. Uber pimp.
That's right.
Mac Daddy,
that's a good one too.
That'd be like level 5, I think.
That's right. Brad Pitt.
I'm a level 5. I'm a level 5 Mac Daddy. he needs to take that system he's developed and publish it so we can all do it.
That's a really good idea.
Cuz I'd do it.
Yeah.
I mean, testing not need it cuz
right.
I'm socially fine.
That's
dude.
Right. I would do something with it.
Right. Let's I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
Yeah. Level 12 masturbator. Video game stuff.
What is this? Ocean's 11 meets Eve Online?
I love this. This is another one of my favorite stories. I think we have a good episode here at the 10.
You have too many favorites. You can only have one favorite, Dan.
Okay, this is my second favorite.
Ah! Okay.
Ocean's 11. Okay, so Eve Online is this MMORPG.
Yes.
Right?
Based on space travel and that kind of junk.
Yes. Essentially what happened was, is... A
was or is
what happened anyway what happened this master of some guild convinced 3 high level members of another guild to turn traitor, And or I well let's see. And I didn't read all the details of the article. I think either like a couple of them may have worked their way up, like infiltrated and worked their way up through the guild, and then when they got there, they managed to turn one of them or something like that. Essentially, through espionage, this guy destroyed an entire guild.
That is fucking
awesome. It's a great read. And talk about, you know, true social role-playing game where people are actually thinking about, and talk about totally innocent. You know, this guy's mafioso tendencies are turned towards EVE Online instead of other people.
Yeah.
But
I mean, that's pretty amazing, because one of the biggest complaints you hear from, especially the role players,
yeah.
is that these MMORPGs don't have good role playing. Like, they're always talking about, we want an enforced RP server where people have to talk in character and have to do this, or else they get, you know, they get
booted.
Yeah, they get the yellow flag until, you know, two yellow flags and you get a red flag. It's like fucking soccer.
Right.
So that's really interesting that something like this came about, especially on a space opera.
I really think that this is the kind of thing that will pull role players to a specific game.
Oh, definitely.
You know, because if you're very into the role playing, I remember way back in the day when we played on the Dune Mush.
Oh, God, that was great.
That was so much fun.
That was some of the best online role playing I've ever done.
Yep, and I think since then, I've been looking for another Dune Mush.
I got a hole in my heart.
I know
the size of Dune Mush, dude. Yeah, I was devastated when they turned that off.
True, I love
when
that
went down. I was devastated.
I had a little robot dog, and I had my own place. But the only way I could get my own place was to get a job, and I had to have somebody hire me.
Well, I was in the guild, and I was involved in reconditioning one of the other players.
That's right.
And I got to be in the room, and I had to grill him with questions.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. Dune Mush. Oh. Love it, baby.
Harkens back to my days.
I've Googled it before to see if it's still running.
No, it's not. I mean, they took it down when like we had been playing it for like about a year, and then they took it down because they didn't have enough. And nothing's ever replaced that as far as
I'd love to find the source, make it an internet game.
Yeah.
Text-based? Think anybody do it anymore?
No. You know what? I've gone back and looked at a few, and the problem is... having the graphics. I like typing.
It's not as interesting as you remember it being.
It's not as... Right. I mean,
Like when you go back to your grade school and be like, these lockers are fucking tiny.
I know. And the slide, you know, the slide's not as cool as it looked, and the monkey bars are so low that your feet drag on the ground.
Yeah.
It's totally nowhere near as fun as it was when you were like four.
That's right. So anyway, check out EVE Online if you're a big MMORPG. RPG. If you're an RPG-er of the MMORPG type.
Wow, that's a lot of acronyms.
Wow. That hurt my mouth.
Okay.
Nintendo creates an easy, accessible video game network. November 11th.
That's a play.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, it's also the date in which Nintendo... will create an easy, accessible video game network.
What does that mean?
That means it'll be like...
easy and accessible?
Yeah. It'll be like Xbox Live, except on your DS. And they're also making it for GameCube.
Really?
So it's this online, and I believe that Mario Kart is the first game that will have it.
Oh...
So now, if you have a wireless network at home, your DS will hook up to the internet through your wireless network, and you can play anyone else in the world online in Mario Kart.
Dude.
How fucking cool is that?
That's free? Awesome.
For free.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I read an article the other day, or who was it? Maybe it was an article, and they talked about the Nintendo Revolution.
Yeah.
And they said, you know what? The controller is really cool and ingenuitive. Not enough. They're still not going to do it. It's not going to change their position in the market.
No, it's not. But see, I think that they're aligning themselves to be people's second system. Because what's going to happen is...
Most people don't have a second system.
I wonder how many most people is.
I don't.
I have three.
Yeah, but you're a fucking freaking nature.
And if you count my PSP and my DS, I've got five.
Yeah.
But you think about it, right? Especially a couple years after they're out. So if you've got an Xbox and you paid $400 for your Xbox 360, and then 2 years later you're kind of bored with the games, and the Nintendo Revolution's $100, you'd throw $100 at it maybe to play some Mario Kart and shit like that.
Only if I didn't have to tell my wife.
Right. Shh, don't tell her.
Well, we'll see how that goes then.
Yeah. So, that's, I don't know, that might be the kick in the pants that Nintendo needs.
Well, we'll have to see about
Well,
that.
We're at an hour and four, and I've got a flight to catch.
So we're going to call it, all right, we're going to talk about your, we'll put the learning annex in next time.
Yeah.
Where are you going?
We'll do that next time. I am going to the visualstudio.net convention in Florida.
And you're
going to
record some stuff so we can throw a couple audio blurbs, right?
And I'm going to record some stuff so we can do some audio blurbs for sure. Okay. Yep, that would be kind of cool. And then we can talk about it and discuss.
All right. That sounds good.
Yeah. So, damn it, I don't have an outro. I'm Dan. I'm going to do a serious one.
All right.
I'm Dan. I am a software developer and professor, and that's about it.
Wow. That's nice.
God, is that it?
That is it. You're pathetic.
Oh, all right, life.
I'm Sterling, and I'm a two cheeseburger eating, French fry loving Mac Daddy.
Oh, you're a one cheeseburger eating, one cheeseburger getting.
That's right. I gave you a cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger. You see how considerate and generous he is?